Hello there, and welcome to another episode of Ruben's Podcast, a show in which I speak to people from my life to know more about their journey so far and the lessons they've learned along the way. On today's show, I'm speaking with Nikita Norona. No, we're not related. I met Nikita back in 2011, and we used to live in the same city, Gurgaon, for a few years. I even DJed at her birthday. You'll hear more about that soon. In this conversation, we chat about a bunch of things. Studying journalism and realizing how it wasn't for her, how Crayons for Kargil came to be, I also DJed for that one, and the company she's building right now. So let's get into it. Awesome. Thanks for taking time to do this, Nix.
Thank you for having me, Roops.
I don't know if you remember, but my first public DJ gig was your birthday.
Yes, it was. I was just going to bring this up. It was. And I was really, at the time, I was really kicked to like, know like the, you know, the cool resi, like resis of like college. Because I was always like going to be like, oh, like, you know, she's hanging out the day skis. Or, and Nadeem would always pitch it as, you don't know what you're talking about. You haven't hung out with us. And I'd be like, man, I also want to be a part of this crew. Yeah. So like, that party was crazy. I was like, wow, this guy has such talent. He's amazing. He's going to do so well as a DJ.
Oh, please. And, I remember it was quite crap. That first gig was really crap.
I'm sure. Also, everyone was so terribly intoxicated. It really didn't matter. Rolling the floor was happening at any music. You could have played Choli Ke Piche and it would be fine.
I think I probably would have played some of that. It was very bad. I remember at some point, I was playing, I don't know if you remember the song Astronomia by this by Tony Iggy. Like, do you remember that song? No? I'm not even trying to make the tune, but I'll send it to you. But I was playing that song, there was nobody dancing, and this is music they play at Tomorrowland, right? And I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, this is a bit weird. This is entire like hall, and there's nobody dancing, and I'm playing like this pumping music. But anyway, like, yeah, both of us were luckily in Gurgaon, so we were in touch after university. But I think a good place to start, maybe for people who are also listening, is what have you been up to since you graduated?
So I gave myself like 5 years. And, you know, I always joke about this with my mom because she was like, you know, you've been saying this, I'm giving myself 5 years, 8 years. 5 years became 8 years because college for me as a decision, Stephens, was ripe, right? I got in, I was like one of those really privileged crap kids who got into Stephens and said, I don't want to go to Stephens. I want to go to Bombay. I want to go to Xavier's. And my mother said, yeah. And my mother said, I'll give you a car if you stay. And I was like, done, I'll stay. So that's how I chose. Yeah, because I had actually gotten my PG in Xavier's. I'd had my first day in Xavier's. And then I got a call back saying that, you know, you've gotten into history. I missed my Stephen's English interview because I was like, I don't want this. I'm not getting this and all of that. So I just didn't really care. And then my mother forced me to go to the interview for history. And I took it and I came out and I was like, yeah, whatever. And people were like crying outside, which I just till date can't understand. These are people who got into college. So I'm just like, why were you crying, man? Like, what happened? You know, because I had a very chill interview. So I was like, okay, whatever. Anyway, I'm not doing this. So I'm going to Bombay the next day. Flew to Bombay, got a call saying, you've got this. Then I'd also gotten into Simbi. And so Simbi, and I've gotten in on a scholarship in Simbi. So Simbi, when I turned Simbi down, Simbi called up saying, why are you saying no to a scholarship? Because Simbi used to have those all-ranking wala things, right? Your rank would show up in a mass communication college. And you had that all-India test that you took.
Yeah.
I just had like a spurt of brilliance after being the most average kid in studies. Like after class 12, I killed it for like 3 months before I think that's basically what I'm getting at. So I got into Simbi and Simbi called me up and the director at Simbi called me up and said, why aren't you taking my scholarship and my offer and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, it's because I've always wanted to go to Xavier's. I've wanted to go back to Bombay. Mm-hmm. And so this is my shot at going back to Bombay and doing like a BA in communication there, you know. Ultimately, he's like, what are your other options? And I was like, I don't know, there's a college in Delhi called Stephens. and I got in. And he was like, okay, I'm going to tell you this, and it's, you know, take it because I'm being honest with you. I can give you the best institution to study in, but Stephens can give you the best network. So go there. Mm. And I was like, man, like a director of a different college is telling me to go somewhere. It's probably a sign. Maybe I should. By then my mother had already like put the bait of a car. So I was like, yes, I will do this.
What kind of a bait is that? Like, I give you a car if you go to Stephens. Said nobody who I know of.
I know, it sounds so, and I feel so like entitled and spoiled when I share the story. So, let alone to be recording it on a public platform is insane. It usually, like, I tell people, like, and people just look at me like, you know how much I studied? You know, it took me like 9 hours and then I got like 97.5%. You know, I didn't get into Stephens and you got in. And I was like,
that's great.
Yeah, sometimes you get things that you really don't want. So, it's fine. But yeah, so that happened. So after that, then I was like, you know, after this brilliance spark that I had, I was like, this is now I have 3 years. I'm not even doing a specialization. I can just mess around if I want to, right? Mm. So I was like, yeah, I'm gonna go crazy in college. I failed 2 papers. In first year, we had only 2 papers. Yeah, I failed one and the Hindi. So it's 2 papers, no, out of 3 that you're failing. So I did all of that rubbish, but luckily we had that semester system, so I survived. And then I said, I want to do something in communication, but like, what can I do? And so I gave myself another 5 years to basically figure out which part of communication I wanted to get into. Mm. I was told that the standard procedure with Stephanian is either you're an IS officer or you're a journalist. So I was like, I can definitely not study more. I will definitely like fail at this, but I will be a journalist. Mm. So, I mean, I just said I'll be a journalist. I don't think my decisions were ever taken calculatively, you know, they were always taken on at that time in my like early 20s, they were always taken as decisions that I'm just doing. Mm. So right after college,
Why did you decide you wanted to be a journalist?
Because I thought journalists change the world and they have this really strong opinion about everything and that, you know, they can actually make a difference to people's lives. And I was like, I want to be this person that can, you know, sit on camera and talk about the news and or write. I wasn't a bad writer. It came very naturally to me. So I was like, I can do this. This is something that's plausible and something that I can see myself kind of mold and shape into. Mm. And yeah, and that's when I made the decision to do my first studying after college, which was go to XIC. So I went to XIC in Bombay.
Which is Xavier?
Xavier's Institute of Communication. So this is the Xavier's College, but it's the mass, not really the master, the Mass Communication Institute, essentially.
Right. So you went back to Bombay finally.
I did go back to Bombay and I went back to Xavier's at that. So I got what I wanted eventually. And the car. Yeah. So yeah, so I went back and I went to XIC and I realized in the first 3 days that I'm never going to become a journalist.
Why? Like, what happened?
Oh no, I made a huge mistake and oh my God, I'm stuck here for the next 1 year. Because, so we were asked a question during our presentation, okay, where it was like, what will you do if there's a fire in a particular place and you have to go to that location and there's 4 people dead, 3 casualties, how are you going to report it, right? So everyone put up their hands saying, you know, blah, 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 blah. And everyone was like, I will go, I'll check my camera, I'll check my mic, I will report it in this way, I will talk, I will interview people who over there and ask them, you know, how did this happen, what happened? So I will investigate before I take my pointers down and then I'm going to go and write my story. Then it came to me and I was like, how many casualties? And I was like, how many injuries? And so she was like, like 20. And I was like, okay, so then I would help them first and then I would go and write my story. And so she started laughing. She was just like, you'd make a terrible journalist. And I was like, why? You have to help. You can't write about dying people when they're dying in front of you. That's a ridiculous thing. And she was like, no, like, but that's the point. Your job is to go and inform a larger audience. So go to the place, see what's happening, take down notes, come back and report it. Because if you don't, someone else will. And I was like, but it's just information. And she was like, that's what journalism is. And I was like, fuck journalism. Like, so it was just a very weird thing because I was, you know, your entire, you grow up thinking that, oh, I want to, you grow up with these things, right? Like a journalist reports, gives us information. This was way before like Mr. Arnab. So things were like still okay. They were getting bad, but they were still okay, you know? Yeah. And so like, so you feel like this is what a journalist does. And then you kind of realize that that's really not it. And they actually don't help people on ground. I think that was the difference that I realized. And that was the difference that made me feel very, very disappointed, you know? Mm-hmm. And also I remember this thing where I was like, I want to work for Nat Geo, you know? And I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. I want to become a journalist to work at Nat Geo. What do I need to do? And then, you know, because my mom's network at that time was people that she was interacting with from different news places. She was like, why don't you go meet the Nat Geo head of marketing? So I was like, cool. And I went and I was like, you know, this is what I want to do. I've always wanted to work here. I love your magazines. I love like spewing fun facts to my friends about nature. And she was like, you have to get a degree in like being a naturalist or like an anthropologist or like, you know, like an astrophysicist. Basically, you have to have a science background to be writing for Nat Geo. And I was like, what, you know? So if I wasn't going to be at Nat Geo, if I wasn't going to get to help people, why was I becoming a journalist? It's just a waste and a scam to me. So I was like, I'm not doing this. So I switched off in that sense. But what helped with that course is that that is the most intense course I've ever had. And I had another one many years later, but that was literally the most intense course. I can fight anyone in a right fight if I had to. I wish I'd done Xavier's before I did history, because it would have taught me to write my papers and be so much better at the bullshitting and like at the elongating of words and things like that, you know?
Sorry, explain that to me more. What do you mean it taught you to fight the right fight?
No, in the sense that right doesn't like W-R-I-T. if there was a competition, like a writing competition, then I'd win like hands down, because of not how they teach you how to write. You ultimately have your own voice, but because of how they tell you to kind of structure and edit and do it in a frame of time, you know? So like 1,000 words, 3,000 words, 5,000 words, these are not big numbers for me. And they weren't ever, you know, in my entire career thereafter. And still, till today, if somebody tells me I have to write something, it really doesn't trigger something stressful at all, you know? And I don't obsess about it. I'm not the kind of writer that takes my work seriously. I just do it, and then I give it to somebody else to see if it's okay. Sometimes it's crap, they give it back to me. Sometimes it works, mostly it works. So I mean, I'm really happy that the course helped me do that. And I'm happy that it kind of streamlined me into being like, okay, it's not journalism, so what's it gonna be?
So coming back, you learned a shit ton of stuff when you were at like studying journalism, right? But you pretty much realized that you don't want to do it. Nat Geo wanted you to be an engineer with a science degree, and so what did you do after that?
So I did you know, go and I became like a tech journalist for a magazine for a brief period of my life, which sounds ridiculous. I think whoever knows me understands that I don't tech at all. But that was fun because it got you again doing the real job. So it's not like I didn't have an option to see it. And I wanted to come back. I was also done being in Bombay. Like all my classmates in Bombay and in Xavier's were so like, this is the dream. I've reached Bombay. I've got this journalism degree and I want to work in Bombay, you know? But I was very keen. I want to come back home. I was like, this is enough. It's great and all. I'll go back. So I came back home and I got the first best option there was.
Yeah.
And I took it. And again, because it was so small and that person hadn't, you know, had the kind of experience like or a certain level of writing that had happened, is that he made me like an editor very soon, you know, from like a journalist to like a editor. And it was just too much of growth, but there was again not too much work happening because the way I viewed writing was something that I was just doing. Yeah. Like it, so somebody would take you know, 2-3 hours to write an article for the day. So you've written two basically in a one work day, but I would write 4-5 because it was just so, and it's tech journalism. Like everything has it. There's only one way you can write it, right? There's only one phone. There's only one car. There's only, so there's all of this is like, so it didn't become something that I could see myself expanding as a skill towards. And also because I realized that I don't particularly like doing this. I was like, okay, which magazine will it take for me to get into this job? You know, I got a job before that. I got a job at an architectural magazine in Bombay, and they wanted me to stay back in Bombay. Oh, the other funny part was that I was so shocked with the pay. I was like, what do you mean 20,000 rupees? What? I went to Stephens and then I went to Xavier's. How can you give me such little money? Then I was like, okay, social media. Because, you know, social media was like just the, it had just started. It's so weird that we've been through all of this, like I sound like some nani ma, like, mere zamane mein pehle, internet aaya. Well,
to be honest, like WhatsApp became a thing in my third year. Before that, like when I only got my first smartphone in my first year of work. So when I was in college, I actually didn't even use WhatsApp. Yeah, it is true. Social media became a thing when we were like entering the workforce.
Yeah. So social media. So then, and I heard about this job and I was like, great, you know, sounds like a great place for me to not get bored and do it, right? So I went to that job. I hated it. I left in 6 months. Mm-hmm. This whole podcast needs to be called What Not to Do or things to like tick off the list in a career path. But again, didn't like it because of work environment, didn't like it because of the same concept, which was the fact that I was helping brands that already had a lot of money. I was like, why do they need this? Like, why does Reliance need this? Or, you know, JSW Steel need this? I wrote, you know, and I wrote, but I wasn't exactly into my job. I was actually terrible at it because conceptually and principally, I wasn't really okay with the fact that I was getting paid now a decent amount of money to write rubbish about a brand with already crores of rupees, practically running our countries. Not just that one, but just like a cookie shop or a, you know, like I was like, it's not giving me that satisfaction. And while I was at that job, I got a call from my school for a school reunion and I went. And that school reunion led to a meeting, which was that we really want to reconnect to our alumni. We're a very young school. My school, Sriram, is like 27, 28 years old, I think. So they were, you know, so they were like, okay, we want to reconnect and we want to do this and that. And how do we go about it? And so I said, we could do a fundraiser. And they said, okay. And then I remember her raising, they were like, who wants to be a part of this fundraiser? And I raised my hand and a girl called Pragya raised her hand from Sriram Aravali, and a guy called Ravi raised his hand. There were only 4 or 5 people in that room. And so I met them and that's how Crayons happened, because we just decided that, and we went out for coffee. We sat down in Galleria. No, what's the place? Cross Point. And we got ourselves a beer. We got ourselves popcorn. They were like, what do we raise money about? And I was like, once again, I will call up. And so I called up Nadeem and I asked him, and I still have that voice note, by the way, because Pragya recorded it, saying that, Nadeem, how would you like us to raise money for Kargil? And he was like, yeah, that's amazing. Let's do it. And we did it. And that was my first job, which had 0 rupees, that gave me the most amount of satisfaction I've had up until this year. Like, genuinely, I put my sweat, blood and tears into it. It was something that we all as a team and as a group felt so strongly about. Yeah. And it really brought together what I'm basically doing today, you know, and what I want to do and all of that. And so that was a good indication for me, because I was like, okay, great. At least I'm not running behind like money. I'm not running behind, you know, the fact that it's, that I'm writing or I'm doing things that I'm not okay doing. And I think I'm like that as a person. If my heart is not into it, you cannot make me want it. Or I will not be the person who will be like, I will work a 9-to-5, even if it's sucking my soul, because I'm making money and I have to do this. If it's not something that it's not, like if it's not touching me, I refuse. My brain refuses. It's like, and I've really tried really hard to improve on this, but I am getting worse with age. I feel like it's reached a point now where I genuinely can't, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, so crayons happened, and then, you know, and then I was like, okay, I guess I like something in the development sector. And after that, I moved to Bharti Foundation, which was Airtel's foundation wing. I worked there. Again, I was amazed with the work they were doing because it was education. Mm. It was, you know, building 284 schools across India. It was driving communication for the Airtel Marathon, which I thought was crazy, and all of that. And worked over there, and I enjoyed it. It was a very comfortable place to be. Like, there wasn't like some crazy levels of work or all of that. It was fine. But I did feel definitely that if I wanted to continue within this sector and within this field, I needed to do something that was, I needed to study more. Like, there was no other way out of it. So I did apply to a bunch of colleges, and I wanted to go to London for reasons best known to me.
At that point of time, why did you choose London?
It was a boy. No, it wasn't a boy. Like, I think... No, I mean, one way of saying it is it was a boy. But the other reason was because the US was too expensive. I also didn't feel like, because I'd already done one kind of master's, I didn't want to go another for 2 years, you know, like it didn't make sense to me. So, and London was offering 1 year courses, like London, Scotland, all of these were like one year. So I was like, okay, you know, I'll do this. And this sounds great. Mm. And then, yeah, I got into SOAS, which is, for people who don't know, the School of Oriental and African Studies. Sounds so wild. Sounds like I basically just went to Tanzania on a trip. but yeah, like I went there and I studied, and it was great because, again, I go with these ideologies of, you know what, now I'll actually take this degree and then I'm going to put all my energies to work towards being a part of the UN, because this is who I am. This is what I want to do. And I entered the classroom with like, this is my purpose in life, and I'm going to get a job here for the UN and work in, like, you know, UNICEF or something and all of that. And my teacher, who was also Indian, he comes in and he says, from India? Okay, great. So let me tell you something. And then he starts giving us the most terrible lecture about how the UN basically sucks, and the UN has basically loaned money to poor countries and basically makes them more poor, because all these countries are doing are paying back these loans that the UN has given them, and vice versa. And so they bring in aid, but the aid comes at a cost, and then you go back into, you know, so, and he made us watch documentaries and films, and, you know, he made us write a paper and blah, blah, blah about it. And again, I was like, but I had this plan. Now you're telling me what, why am I here if I'm not going to the UN? Like, why am I spending, you know, obnoxious amounts of money?
Yeah.
But I think it was great because of that, because it made you unlearn everything you had learned, and it made you to, and it taught me to research every single thing, you know, twice, thrice, get your facts right, write with a lot of subjectivity, you know, all of that. Like, so I think it was a very interesting course for me to do. It was interesting for me to be in London at the time, because I was playing basketball for SOAS. I was babysitting on the side so that I could travel. I was, you know, I was in a relationship with a great dog. Not with the dog, with the person, but like, I was in a relationship that gave me the comfort of a dog and a home in a city that I didn't know. So, you know, so everything was kind of in a position that I felt like I made the most out of my trip there and my time there. And I came back thinking like, I've hit the nail on the head now, like, because now I can branch out into the world and do what I'm seeking, you know? Yeah. And so I worked, after that I worked as like a marketing and communication person overall for another company, which was a pretty big company. It involved people from, you know, different parts of the world. I was one of three Indians in that office. Everyone else was from, you know, Kenya, Russia, you know, China, anywhere actually. And it was fun because after you go from SOAS, which is anyway so diverse,
yeah,
you go into this office, which is as diverse in Gurgaon. So what could be better, you know? And so I did some of that. And again, growth curve, where I wanted to be, what I wanted to accomplish, my capabilities, all of that was a constant question in my head. And I didn't particularly feel like that was a scenario where I could possibly be and learn. And, you know, the other thing that had happened is I had now, for the first time after years of staying at home, I was now staying on my own, you know. That whole comfort of having Juns, the whole comfort of having, you know, all of that had gone. Now, you know, it was running the house, figuring out how many rotis to make, figuring out the rent, you know, figuring out different things that I frankly had no idea of, because again, privilege is fun to have, you know. So it was hard. It was so hard because I was like, man, like how do people do this? You know, how does my mom work and run the house? Yeah. I would call, like, I think about the times I called and be like, I don't want bhindi today. Like, screw it. Like, you know, so weird. What a weird thing to do. So I had all these problems and I had begun to think about the whole money aspect and be like, you know, if I'm on ground, then I can't, I'm helping people on ground directly, but I'm not making enough for me to live a life that I was otherwise used to living.
Yeah.
Now I'm living a life where, while my friends are going out, I'm saying, no, I don't want to because I can't afford it. You know, while my friends are earning in a bracket, I'm not even close. And it's not even about the comparison as much as it's about what kind of life do I want? And is this situation giving it to me right now? Or do I see the situation giving it to me in 5 years? And I didn't, you know, and so it was again a harsh reality for me to face, because I was like, again, this sucks because now I'm technically helping people, but now I'm not making any money. And like, there has to be a balance of some kind, you know, there has to be a way out of this. And I applied eventually to WeWork, because I was like, this profile made sense to me. It was a community job. It involved me to meet a lot of people, which I really, really liked. It involved a certain process, which I really, really needed, because I had so far been in startups and young companies and it was chaotic. So to have, like, you know, a place where they had, even though it was a startup, but to be so structured with everything and to be so organized and to teach you that this is what you do if this happens, this is what you do if that happens, was great. So I was like, this is fine, you know. And I think it's safe to say that I really enjoyed my time there because of the people. Like, I thought the people were fabulous. I thought the members were great. Such interesting stories, you know, such interesting ways of working, and also such an interesting company model. Like, you know, to just function on that scale and that level and blah blah blah. And I felt like, yeah, I could do this for a little bit. The whole how do I make a difference, or how do I make a larger goal, always stuck by me. I remember there were two members in WeWork who would always come and chat with me. And once they asked me, what did you do? And I gave them this whole story in like 5 minutes. And they were like, so what are you doing here? You know? And I was like, oh, like, you know, cause this is a job that, you know, seemed like it was people oriented, that it was nice. It paid a decent amount. I got to learn so many things already, blah, blah, blah. And so they were like, yeah, but this isn't what, you know, you're cut out to do, though. I hope you understand that. And I would just laugh it off and be like, you know, yeah, but this is nice. I'm satisfied. I'm happy. I'm paying my bills. I'm in an environment that I really like, you know. And then the pandemic hit. So that happened. That was great. And WeWork took a really bad hit. And, you know, there were a lot of us who were asked to leave, who were asked to take furlough. You know, I fit in that category. And that's when I had the time to really think about what I wanted to do and what I wanted to achieve and where I wanted to go with this. So one approach was to say, okay, I have 3 months to find another job. I need to get to it. I'm going to try and look up every single application I can find, right? So I do this research. I come up with lots of job applications, from Larsen & Toubro to Google to, you know, IBM to, I don't know, I must have gone through the entire list, okay, including this place called Shrishti Decorations, which is some strange ass startup in Bangalore, where I was like, got it, it's fine, it fits my profile, I'm just gonna cram applying. I think after about 38 to 42 rejections later, you kind of want to hear like the universe speak to you. So you're just in a moment where you're like, why is this happening? Like, is it because I'm terrible at my job? Is it because I have written bad applications? Is it because, well, the job market sucks right now? There is no way to find a job right now. Or is it really honestly because this is what you want to do, Nikita? Like, is this what you want to do? Do you want to work at Larsen & Toubro? No, I don't. I would suck at working there. If they're listening to me and I've applied to you, I'm sorry. Because I will suck at my job. Like, telling you in advance. But, you know, so it really, really helped put things into perspective. I mean, everyone's had a terrible year.
Yeah.
And I had to move cities. You know, I had a death in the family. I had I had job instability, instability. And it just reached a point where it forces you to sit down and really think about what you want to do. First thing, to get your health in order. That was all over the place in Delhi. So it was, okay, how do I fix this now that I'm home? Second was to figure out, how do I make this work for me, you know, and in what way? So I reached out to different people, you know, the you know, people that I had good equations with as members, this, that. I just spoke to them about things. I was like, you know, this is what my deal is. This is actually what I want to do. And that particular person was like, oh, great. You know, finally, you can actually like figure this out for yourself now. I'm so happy for you. And he was the most excited about this situation, right? And I was like, I don't know why you're sounding so excited. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Yeah. So, but I think what 2020 has taught me has just been like, I was telling somebody this yesterday, is that I don't think I have the time to process the shit that's gone down. Because after a point, I was like, you know what? Bring it. Screw you. Like, I'm going to treat this as just another way to say, screw you. So give me what you have. Give me those rejections. Give me whatever you've put me through. And let me show you that I can still do something. And you, in the sense, you being me, like, just out of the position that I was in, of just reflecting and thinking about stuff. And while all of this reflection was happening, and while I kind of aligned myself to the universe, and I really believe in that, I sound like a proper like hippie when I say this, but the moment I changed my attitude, essentially, that's what I mean, is the moment I got a call from Chuck, and he was like, you know, my friend from B school, he's a really close friend of mine. Him and his wife started a company. They really need marketing and brand help. Do you want to help them? And I was like, sure. You know, I can do that. And I heard the model, and I thought it was so interesting. It involved giving back to people. It involved the fact that it was like in a situation, in a scenario that was on ground impact, but still, you know, and it was part-time, which was great. So I had enough time to, again, in case I wanted to go back to a day job, I could try and figure out my options. I started with that. And then I started applying and talking to more people. I got another position, you know, as a consultant, where it was in Delhi, and they just wanted me to do their entire strategy bit. And I was like, great, I can do that, because they already had PR teams and social media teams ready. Again, it was about giving back. It was about helping kids. So I was like, that's up my alley. I managed to, again, do that for 16 hours. So today I'm in a position where now I want more clients. Now I want the opportunity to actually hire somebody else. Like, I have the cutest 17-year-old intern who does like most of my writing work now. Like, because I reached a point where I was like, I need to use my brains. Like, can somebody just take this away from me? Also, because I don't particularly enjoy writing. She loves it. So I was like, take it, do it. It's fine, you know? And now I'm thinking on those lines, because I'm like, oh, I can actually do this with one other person, and then I can take on more people. The whole point of me doing this is so that I can match people to their ambition and their impact, and I can put it out to the world. And that's what I'm good at. That's what I enjoy. And that's what's making me happy. So now I have a work-life balance, which I never had before. And I get to take care of my health, and I'm making money, and I'm helping people, and everything's fine, hopefully. But that's the dream, is to kind of go upwards from here and not from where I started. That's basically what I'm trying to tell you when I chose Stephen's over Xavier's. I mean, the opposite.
Got it. Now it all makes sense. on what all you said.
Oh, it all makes sense. This is why I gave you such a long story.
But no, I think it was very helpful to understand that journey. So I had a couple of questions. So I think one thing which I'm very curious to know is when you said that, you know, you changed this attitude of yours, where you said that, you know, the words you used is, I align myself with the universe. Talk to me more about that. Like, how did you go about doing that? And what did it mean that you now have aligned yourself with the universe?
So I just think I'm an incredibly stubborn person, you know, and it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. And it works well for me most times. Most times it really doesn't, you know. But what I did was I'm also the kind of person who in a crisis or if the boat is sinking, I will be the person who is like fight or flight, right? So I'm the person who fights. And so I will do everything I can to make sure things are all right and that the boat is steady. And then I will kind of put that boat and make it go ahead in whatever broken state it is. It only hits me later that I've been through this. And so it registers in other ways. But I think that's what it is you sitting down and saying, listen, boat is sinking. What are you going to do? There's one option. Either you cry about it. Either you say, you know, this is something that you, why did this happen to me? You feel sorry for yourself. Or you say, okay, I'm going to take, you know, a part of this boat and try and make it work. And I'm going to take a life jacket. I'm going to jump. I'm going to figure it out. That's the island. This is where I need to go. This is what I need to do. Right. So I think it's just that. It's just that my experiences in my life have always taught me to not just go with the flow, to understand why something's happening, and to also listen to your intuition. I think I lacked listening to my intuition a lot in my early 20s. And I started doing that only post 25, you know, where I was like, okay, where is this really taking me? Why am I actually doing this? What do you actually want to do? You know, it's about listening to your five-year-old self a lot. So one way to fight your five-year-old self is like, and I'm also kind of like very mechanical in that way where I'm like, oh, I have to, you know, look for another job after a job that I really liked. I'm going to give myself exactly 2 hours to feel sorry about this. Cool. And then the next day, I'm just going to figure out what my goals are, what I want to do, you know. I think that the general process of it, though, is that I've always been a person who's gone by elimination process. I want to experience things for myself. I want to make sure I know that that's the wrong thing for me to do because I've tried it, and then move on to something else. I'm not the kind, so I will take those risks. I will be like, okay, you know, and eventually reach this conclusion. So me sitting down on my lime green sofa and like being like, okay, Nikita, 42 rejections. What is it? Where is this going? You know, figure it out and talk about it. And there's so many fears that everyone has, right? I think if the pandemic hadn't happened, I wouldn't have ever gotten down to doing this early. This is such a, I met somebody at a party the other day and she asked me, she was like, what do you do? And I was like, oh, I'm a brand and marketing consultant. And she was like, how old are you? And I was like, oh, 27. And she was like, isn't that really young to be a brand and marketing consultant? And I was like, well, it's the pandemic. So anything's possible, you know, how does it matter? Yeah. So yeah, so I'm like grateful in a lot of ways that it gave me that time to listen to five-year-old self and be like, where is this going and who do you want to be, and follow that for a change instead of going with the flow and doing something that is textbook validated by society. Yeah,
I agree. I think the pandemic had that effect on a bunch of people, I think me included. Despite all the challenges and the hardships, right, I think it did allow a lot of people to just take a pause and take a step back. So that's super interesting. So you're now a brand and marketing consultant. How are you thinking about the future?
With regards to what I want to do as a brand and marketing consultant?
Yeah, like you're doing this, and we were chatting, right? You're currently in the process of trying to figure out a name of a company and all of that. So talk about the future and how you're thinking about it now that you've sort of figured out that this is how all of this aligns.
So I think for me, it's a very clear path as what I see as a company, and it's got a lot of intertwining. I don't believe that companies should be competition, not when you're trying to sell an ideology and an initiative and an impact, right? So I strongly believe that the people that I work for or seek to work with are people who are looking at collaboration as change, essentially, and looking at collaboration as the new way of getting growth, like growth in the biggest way possible. And on the way, then also giving people equal opportunity and understanding different, you know, parameters of what and how that looks like. And I think for me, I do that really well because I will understand each person's complexity. I think I've always had a very strong sense of empathy, and that results in me constantly gravitating towards how do I help you? Can I fix this with something else? You know, how is it going to happen? And so at least the clients that I have right now, I see them working together in the future. That's my like goal. If I get four more, I will figure out how to merge them as well, you know, so that everyone is benefiting out of it. I don't want it to be a situation where somebody is getting insecure or somebody is not doing well or somebody, you know, no, it has to be an environment which is constantly, which is a hard one to do, but constantly positive and constantly on a curve of, hey man, I'll do well if you do well. So how do I do that? Right. So I think that's just how I see me running a company. Deep, when I was speaking to him and I said, you know, I'm thinking of running a company. He just laughed. He's like, oh, he's like, do you know math? No, but I will run a company. That will happen. But that's because I feel like my heart is in the right place and my universe is aligned. So I can make it happen, you know? So the goal is to, of course, spread that ideology. The goal is to, of course, have people here. I'm, you know, as an independent consultant, you are directly accountable for the work you do. If you do a shit job, it nobody else is going to work with you, right? Yeah. So you have to make sure that your quality of work is great. And it's been a great learning experience for me because all this time I've been in jobs where I don't think I gave it my 100%. This job has me giving it my 200%. Because now it's my baby and I can't afford to, you know, to just abandon it or leave it in a so-so state. Yeah. So I think the idea is to do that, to spread the ideology. The idea is to hopefully hire somebody else. You know, the idea is, of course, to get three or four more new leads if I do hire that person. I, again, don't even want to work with more than a certain bunch of people. I'm not the kind of person who I tried to figure out. When I was doing crayons, I was like, this would be great if I had a company full of 200 volunteers as children. And if I had like, you know, an arts department and a finance department and accounts doing my, you know, it'd be great to have such a big company. But do I want this? Will this ruin my peace of mind? Yes, it will. Will it not make me like, will it lead that work-life balance that I'm constantly striving for? It will. So now I'm like, I want one good person. I want five people that can work together really well, like five companies or clients that can work together really well. And I see synergies around and I want to do a good job of it. So like, and I think I'm confident enough to have that happen. You know, if once the pandemic eases out and opportunities come as and when they come, and of course to help companies or organizations or nonprofits or wherever that fits, to give them that voice, because I don't think it's now only that people are finding communication and brand is important. I think when we were in college, nobody got budgets for marketing. Like, you know, now suddenly people are like, no, I need this because this is what's going to get me sales or downloads or clickbait or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah. As you look back, right, and you've been through a lot, like, talk to me about the stuff you've learned about yourself along the way, because I feel it's been quite an interesting roller coaster, right? It's taken you, like, I won't say it's taken you time, but I think you've learned a lot about yourself and what you want, what you don't like through this journey. What do you think is the biggest thing you've learned about yourself in these years?
I think it's genuinely to be honest to myself more than anything. I think I've spent a lot of my time being in denial about a lot of things, you know, and not registering something, not being the most comfortable, not, you know, settling for things that I probably didn't want. I was too much into the whole go with the flow, things will work out. This is what's like cool right now, so I'm gonna do this. This is what my parents want me to do. You know, I come from a family which I felt a bit insecure and pressurized about, but I was like, man, my mom's done so well. I want to be able to do at least 3% of what she's doing. You know, how do I do that if I'm, you know, whiling away my time somewhere? And how do I do that if I'm not making this much money? How do I do that for so many reasons? So I think those questions that I asked myself today, or like asked myself literally 8 months back when the pandemic hit, is not something I'd ask myself ever. And even if I did, I never gave myself the correct answer of just sit down, talk to yourself. I think people really need to talk to themselves. I genuinely recommend it.
Why do you think people don't do that?
Because it's the hardest thing to do. It is literally the hardest thing to talk to yourself and tell yourself that you are screwing up royally right now. You are going nowhere in your life. You're an idiot. You need to fix things. You need to figure this out. It helps you. It forces you to think, right? It forces you to think about different things. And I've only had to do that twice in my life. I mean, once was, of course, this time now. And now I've realized that, okay, this is great practice to do. And the other time was when I went for a Tibetan exchange program to Dharamshala, and I stayed there alone for a month. And, you know, with different people from all over the world. And I stayed with monks and nuns. And I saw how they lived. And they used to eat a tingmo every day, which was basically a ball of gluten with like vegetable broth. And that's what they were happy with. And then we would have meditation sessions, which I hated because I was like, I don't want to address things. You know, I don't want to sit and ponder about why something's not worked out, why I have a bad relationship, why my parents don't talk to me, why this, why that. I'm just giving scenarios and examples. But it forced me to think about it. It forced me to have that catharsis moment, right? But I'm saying, like, why do I have to go to the hills to achieve that? Mm-hmm. Why do I have to smoke some to, like, achieve that, right? Like, do it. Do it every day. Do it regularly so that you don't reach a point where you're like, oh, I suck. You know, life is, like, coming apart, like, literally.
So do you do this every day now?
I think I do it at least twice a week. Like, I think the honest answer would be, like, twice a week. Because I'm also in a situation now where I have to think about things, like, professionally, I have to think about things where I'm, like, okay, realistically speaking, though, where is this going? Constantly check yourself. Don't over aim. Don't over, you know, try and get things too easily or try and get there faster than you can anticipate or you can handle, you know? So stuff like that. So these are conversations that I'm constantly having in myself professionally and personally as well. It's about neither where do you see yourself 5 years down the line? Is today a fitting scenario for where you see yourself 5 years down the line? You know, I'm not even thinking 10 years, 20 years. It's too far in the future. You really don't know. I didn't know I was going to move to Bangalore. And here I am. I came with, you know, a suitcase for 2 weeks. And I stayed here, you know, so things like that. So I twice a week. And how much do I recommend it? It's probably like every day, you know, and the personal stuff is still hard for me. I think the personal stuff, like things that I am now, like the exhaustion of 2020 has now started coming and hitting me. Because I'm like, okay, now work is slowing down a little bit. I have a little time to think. I don't have a workout to hide behind. So now I'm like, wow, this year really, really changed. Mm. You know, I remember yesterday you texted me and you were like, how are you? Have you been? You know, 2-3 days back. And I said, great. I've been doing really great is what I said. And 2020 has been a good year is the other thing I said. And then I looked at the message. I was like, this guy must be thinking I'm an asshole. Like, what? And, you know, what I meant is all these things, essentially, is that it forced me to kind of take a hard look at myself and who I wanted to be in the future. And hopefully, like, even a normal scenario doesn't change that, you know, if I have to go work.
Yeah. And what's the big question you're pondering on these days?
What's the big question? Oh, okay. I'm going to say my first question is, what should I name my company? Please DM me some deets, but also I think the big question is if it's a very deep question, at least for me it is, but I think for me it's like, what do you truly see as like a holistic life? Like what fits into that category? Does a fancy holiday fit into that category? Does spending time with your family fit into that category? You know, so what equates to that, and am I doing a good job of it to get there? Like, Yeah. So I think that those are things that I've reached now. I mean, you're also having this in like this chat with me like 2 weeks before the worst year on this planet ends. So you know, so it is contemplative, and it is kind of like, okay, am I going where I need to go, and am I kind of,
yeah,
is it okay? And also, if it's not, I think that I've also acknowledged some parts where it's just not, but I've also not beaten myself up over it. I'm like, it's fine, you know, it'll get there. As long as you know it and you acknowledge it, it's cool. Next step would be to solve it.
Yeah, I agree. I've been thinking about that a lot. About I think for me, it's been like work has been like a big central pillar of my life. And I think the last year has at least made me realize that that's not a very healthy or a very non-sustainable state to be in. So yeah, I completely agree on, you know, the question of what does a good life look and feel like. And yeah, I have some, you know, like blueprint of what that feels, or at least the way I think about it is, you know, these are the pillars in which my life needs to be on. But the second big question I'm thinking about these days is how much of money is enough? Because I feel that you have to draw the line in the sand and saying like, okay, this is the amount of money I need. And I think there is, like, of course, it's a hard question, but I feel there is some, you can, you know, put some science behind it, because once you draw that in the line, and then at least you know what you're aiming and chasing towards. Because for me, it's like, otherwise it's just an ending, like an endless chase on like more and more and more. But anyway, it's interesting to know that. Moving on, I know we are up on time. So if you have another 15, 20 minutes, we'll continue. Oh,
I have a Friday off. Go
okay,
for it.
Awesome. So a bunch of people listen to the podcast, right? Some people might know you, some people might not know you. If somebody who does not know you at all was listening to this, what's the one thing you would want to tell them?
About myself?
About anything. They don't know you. They don't know who
about
you
are. About anything.
They just landed up on this podcast somehow. And they're listening
to an interesting
with
one.
Nikita. What would you want to say to them? But I'll tell you where the inspiration of this came from. I was listening to another podcast, and a question the host asked a lot of their guests is, if you could have a billboard for a day, what would that say? So basically that's what I'm trying to get at. If a total random stranger was listening to this and you had to say something, what would you want to have them or say to them?
It's not as bad as it looks or feels. Like, you know, like, try it. Like, do it. And you'll realize it's not that bad. Like, anything. You can use that for anything. Like, put it in any scenario or any context. You know, fried eggs, pig's feet, like, your career, your relationship. Like, yeah, anything. A past thing, like, it really is not that bad as it looked or felt.
Got it.
You know, and there's a lot of growth from that every single time.
Yeah.
So for sure.
I think
that's a damn question. What would you all say? I'm so curious. You can cut this. I just generally want to know.
What would I say? I don't know. There was a billboard.
Nice. You got so wowed by asking the question.
I that's the question, not the answers. I actually don't know.
Wow.
I have no clue what I would say. That sucks.
This I'm not letting go.
Okay, why don't you ask me this question towards the end when I ask you a question you can ask me? But hopefully I can get something. Okay. As we come to the end of the show or the episode. If you look back at 19-year-old Nikita and you were to give her two pieces of advice, what would that be?
I thought of something instinctively, but that's not what I want to say.
What?
No, I think 19-year-old Nikita, I would say that, like, sit tight, because your entire world and what you think of it is going to change. And you need to have the appetite to deal with it. Because if you don't, you would have already defeated yourself. So I think that the ups and downs that I have faced have, the downs have been like mad solid downs. Like, it's like, how, you know, it's like one day I laughed. I sat down in that moment and that phase I was having, I actually sat down and I laughed. I was like, how could it be this bad? it's mad, you know, but like, literally, like, I think one thing I would tell her is that it's going to be a journey, and you need to be accepting of something. You need to be accepting that your thoughts are going to change and your entire way of viewing life is going to change. I think the second thing would probably be chase the right things. Don't chase things because they are bright and shiny. You know, kind of try and go beyond what meets the eye, because it's never what meets the eye that you have to deal with. I think that it sounds great, you know. Like, my friends have consultant jobs. I don't know a single consultant friend of mine that has not cried once and been like, I don't want to do this. I hate this. You know, like, this is not what I was cut out to do. This is what my other aim is. Completely different aim as to what they've been doing for so many years. And so I think, yeah, like, it's definitely to just, like, look closely and clearly. I also, you know, interestingly enough, I mean, generally, you don't need to keep this, but, like, I was in such a protected environment, right, from school. Like, I went from Sri Ram school, which kind of basically interviewed the same kind of people to be together in, like a pool, you know, for 12 years until they moved on to college. And they protect you so much that you can go and talk to your teacher, you can fight with her, you can be like, how can you not be my teacher? It's like this crazy environment where you feel like you're straight out of home into another home. You know, that's what I grew up as. And then that environment breaks when you come into Stephen's, where it's like everyone's from a different place, and suddenly you don't have that bearing. Suddenly you're not house captain. Suddenly you don't have these, you're not the, you know, you're not the popular one or the nerdy one or the cool one. You don't have an identity suddenly. You're like, this is college. Now I have to start all over again.
Yeah.
And then from college, from Stephen's, you go out into the world again, and they say, wow, you were so protected, you were in Stephen's, you know? Like, so it's like, what? That was protection? Oh, okay. And then you go into Xavier's, and then it's like another protection level. So it's like, I've just constantly, you know, been unwrapping one protection, like layer, you know, as like, I'm one of those big giant boxes of gifts that are little boxes inside. I'm yet to reach that little tiny box and see what it has for me in there. But I think that journey of unwrapping has been pretty awesome.
How far away are you from the ultimate box?
Oh, I'm at least like 100 boxes away. This year helped. I've shed like at least 5 like boxes. I was like, wow, never thought that this could happen. Yeah. But yeah, it's pretty fun. Like, I don't regret anything I did. I think I someone always asks me that, and people always ask me about relationships specifically and say, oh, do you regret this? Wouldn't you have, you know, rather done something else? And I'm like, no, because those were my formative years. If you ask me this at 35, if I wasted my time with somebody from 35 to 45, then maybe I'll be like, yeah, that was a fucking waste of time. But if, like, you're asking me this in my 20s, I was seeing people in their 20s and witnessing what they were going through and what I was going through. And it's such a cool journey to be on with somebody, you know?
Yeah.
Or without, like, it doesn't matter how you view it, but I would not change it for anything. This whole Instagram trend of live alone in your 20s, travel the world, be who you want to be, relish your kingdom, the world is your oyster. Like, see, it's not. It's okay. You know, do what you want. It's fine. Like, just, it's going to be all right. Yeah. Whatever you do, either way, you're going to get kicked in the ass. Either way, you're going to have a great time. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's good advice. To finally wrap up, what question do you have for me?
You know what it is, is that if you had your word, actually, what would your, yeah, I think it would be definitely the billboard question.
So the question is, if I had a billboard, what would it say?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought about it. It'll probably be, I would like it to be a dynamic billboard. So it's like everybody who sees a slightly different version of it. But in a sense, it would say, you're going to die in X number of days. And that's what it would say. And I think the reason I want that, because for the longest time, and I've been thinking about it a lot recently, and I'll sound so depressed and morose right now, but like death was a very like scary thing. But I've been reading recently about like how samurais meditate, and apparently they meditate about them dying, about death, right? And they really think about that, because weirdly enough, and I've been watching Altered Carbon recently on Netflix, if you live forever, that's, it's weird. And actually death is probably a good thing, because it, you know, it gives a finite end to stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just keep reminding yourself, like, I'm already going to be 30. And if I was born in the 1920s, this was the end of my life. Like, most people died when they were 30, 30, 32, right? And so this was it. You know, you've lived whatever you had to live, and get ready to kick the bucket, man. And I think if you keep asking yourself and you keep reminding yourself that, you really, like you said, right? You take the decisions. It's never that bad. You be bold. So yeah, like in a probably less morose and a depressing way, but that billboard would say that you're going to die in X days or in X hours. And a lot of people have this, like a lot of people I know, but I've seen like people talk about this. They have this death calendar or a death timer, where they have like a small timer on their desktop, which says, you know, you're going to die in these many days, and every second it's clocking down.
I think it would give me so much anxiety.
It would give you a lot of anxiety, but I feel once you break through that anxiety, you're like, you know, I might as well fucking do it, right? Like, it's the clock is ticking anyway, so I might as well just do it.
True. That's really cool. The other question I was going to ask you actually is, during your podcast, like including me, do you think that you've, through this conversation, realized that the people you've interviewed or chatted with have changed in any way since college?
Absolutely. I think the answer to that question is yes, people have changed. But I don't feel that they are different individuals. To be honest, I don't know if change is the right word, but I see them having a lot more perspective. I see them having a lot more, like they're just lot more thoughtful. And because I feel I've changed, and I feel a bit like I'm not the same person as I was in university, but maybe we were always that same person, right? And maybe that part of us never surfaced up. So in some way, like the ease of all of these conversations makes me feel like, oh, everybody's still the same. But when I listen to the content of the conversation, it's so different. So it's a weird, like a paradox, right? We are still the same, but we're still very different. And I think like when I'd written the essay, or what the inspiration of me starting this podcast, and you know, through pandemic, we were just connecting with a lot of friends. It literally was like, we're all the same, but yet we're so different, right? So yeah, I think to answer your question, yeah, I feel everybody's pretty much similar, but like we're very different.
Yeah, I don't think I've had any kind of conversation with you that's been this heavy in all the years I've known you, like ever. Like those questions only on WhatsApp, I was like, what is he saying? Why is he not being a DJ? I just want him to like it was just, you know. But like, you also realize that these things are things that all of us have thought about, like, and all of us have kind of come through and come to the conclusion. I don't think you'll meet a person who's like, come, let's go to Kitty Sue. Like,
and there's nothing wrong with that. I think we spent hundreds, thousands of hours doing that, and sometimes I'm like, and what I really like is, I know that I'm going to have an interesting conversation. I know that I'm going to learn something from this conversation. And I know it's going to be a thought-provoking conversation for both of us, and also for a lot of people listening in. I don't know if there were too many people out there I could do this with, but yeah, like I'm like, we've already done a lot of that, and we'll probably continue doing that. But yeah, maybe it's worth taking time and just see what happens, right? Just see what happens if you have these kind of conversations. So it's been a good journey.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you're doing this. Like, I really want to, like, at least the people that I know, I would like love to listen to 10 years later as well.
Yeah.
And like, now what are you thinking? You know, there's a good way of kind of measuring it as to like where you've come. Maybe 10 years later, I'll listen to this podcast and be like, wow, I sounded so hopeful and positive. Look at me now. Like, I hate everyone. I hate everything, you know? So be interesting. It's like putting your goals into a wall hole and opening years later, but digitally.
Awesome. So I think that's that.
thanks for doing this, and thanks for taking time to speak with me.
No, you're welcome. I hope you got whatever it is you were looking for. I have no idea. And I'm sorry if I rambled and I went off topic. But I think that's I think with the podcast, you also like feel like you can. Like, ye to edit ho jayega. It's okay. I'll say whatever I want.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the podcast. I upload new episodes every Friday, and I'll see you in the next one. Until then, you can listen to Tony Iggy's Astronomia. I don't think I've played that song at my gigs for a very, very long time.